for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. I am Aaron Broughton, your host for today, and I want to thank you for tuning in to today's program. Well, over the past few programs, we've actually been looking at Bible geography and giving kind of a land tour of Israel of the special places, both past and present. Well, last time we traveled through the hills of Hebron, visiting unique places such as Beit Guvrin, the old Edomite capital, Lachish, and also the Cave of the Patriarchs called Machpelah, which is in Hebron. Now we turn our attention toward the city of Abraham, Beersheba. Beersheba is referred to as the capital of the Negev Desert, and is the largest city in southern Israel, boasting a population of over 200,000 people. Tel Beersheba, which is the biblical site for this town, lies just a few minutes away from the city center. Archaeologists have uncovered living quarters, as well as a well that dates back to the time of Abraham, and even a first temple-era water reservoir. The modern city of Beersheba is the home of the Ben-Gurion Institute of Technology, which has made some great strides in developing the Negev Desert to literally blossom as a rose. Now, this was the heartbeat of David Ben-Gurion, who was the first prime minister of Israel. David Ben-Gurion loved the Negev Desert and lived most of his life there after his political career. His modest home still stands today at Sede Boker and is open to the public. He and his wife Paula are buried not too far from this location, overlooking the wilderness of Zin. Now, this is actually the area where the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness before settling in the land of Canaan. Let's now head a little east to the city of Arad. Now, Arad is a small town which has seen some hostility over the last few years between the ultra-Orthodox Jewish groups and the Messianic believers in Jesus. Many followers of Jesus have been persecuted by these groups and have tried to have them removed from the city. These believers are standing firm, but need our prayers at this time. Just outside the city of Arad is the biblical site of Arad, which housed a temple modeled on a smaller scale after Solomon's temple in Jerusalem. We will turn further south now as we come to the Nabataean city of Avdat. Avdat was the most important city on the incense route after Petra, between the 1st century BC and the 7th century AD. It was founded in the 3rd century BC and inhabited by the Nabataeans, the Romans, and also the Byzantines. Avdat also has great views that span across the Negev Desert. Now, further south, we come to the edge of a cliff. I hope you are not too afraid of heights, because we are now at the Rimmon Crater in Mizpah Rimmon. Now, Mizpah Rimmon is just a small town, maybe about 5,000 people, but here at the Rimmon Crater, this has been called the Grand Canyon of Israel, and the drop in front of us gives way to an impressive and expansive view of the wonderful colors of the desert bedrock. Now, Rimmon Crater isn't exactly a crater, but definitely gives that impression because of its bowl-like shape. Now, traveling further south, we are now on a two-hour bus ride to Eilat on the Red Sea. Now, before we get there, please enjoy the view of the rugged and majestic mountains of the Negev that seem to change color throughout the day due to the location of the sun's rays. Along the way, you'll begin to see some green and blue tints and lines in the bedrock, which is called Amalekite and Eilat stone. In fact, the Eilat stone, the blue and the green stones together, this is only found here in Israel near the Red Sea. Well, now we are in the territory where King Solomon had his copper mines. Today, this stone is especially made into jewelry, which you can buy here in the tax-free city of Eilat, where we just now arrived. Now, after a long day in traveling, we can now rest in what I like to call the Palm Beach of Israel. This is a big resort city with several hotels, beaches, and shopping, especially having fun on the boardwalk. So relax now and enjoy. Truly, the Negev Desert area of Israel is stunningly beautiful and fascinating. It is a definite favor of mine, as well as many other visitors who come to the Holy Land. From ancient history to the current people and future events, there is something to learn and appreciate here at every turn. I invite you to join us again on our next program as we will drive now towards the Dead Sea area, the land of Israel. Next stop on our journey is Masada. Come along with us and invite a friend as well. Also, want to invite you to come with us as IBJM is hosting a special tour to Israel, March 10th through the 21st of 2014. Contact us at 423 877-876-8150 or go online at ibjam.org for more information. Now with this in mind, let's open our Bibles as we study together with our teacher, Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman.
Welcome back to another radio program. We will conclude our study of the Old Testament books by examining the prophecy of Malachi. The name Malachi means my messenger or my angel. The book contained no personal information about the author. Since the Jews of that era had a governor, not a monarch, many commentators suggested that this work appeared when the Medo-Persian Empire served as Israel's overlords. The first two chapters of Malachi detailed the multiple indictments that God issued about the behavior of the Jewish people. The final two chapters dealt with God's judgment and restoration of the Jewish people. Malachi opened his prophecy with a dialogue where God asserted his love for Israel. When the Jews in reply asked how they could verify that statement, God answered by contrasting his treatment of the Israelites with that of the Edomites. God will not allow Edom to rebuild its desolate places. Others will refer to them as the border of wickedness and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. God laid out his case against the Jewish people. The first item he mentioned involved the disrespect they showed him. He inquired of them, quote, "If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear?" Unquote. The Jews brought God the worst of their animals for sacrifices, not the best. God sarcastically asked them how their ruler might react if they did the same thing to him. He remarked that the Jews remained derelict in their spiritual duties. They looked at honoring God as a duty, and that they deserved to receive wages for performing it. They considered his offerings to be polluted and contemptible. The Jews of Malachi's time regarded worshiping God as weariness. Because of their attitude, God took no pleasure in those Jews, nor would he accept their offerings. However, he will magnify his name among the Gentiles. They will burn incense unto him and make pure offerings to him. In the second chapter of Malachi, God turned his attention to the priesthood. He condemned the religious leaders of Israel for failing to glorify his name. Thus, he cursed their blessings, and he would continue to do so if they remained unrepentant. The priests had not lived up to their end of God's agreement with them. God reminded them of the earlier priests, represented by Levi, their progenitor. Quote, "The law of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not found in his lips. He walked with me in peace and equity, and did turn many away from iniquity." Unquote. By way of contrast, God condemned the behavior of Israel's priests. Quote, "For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, and they should seek the law in his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. But ye are departed out of the way. Ye have caused many to stumble at the law. Ye have corrupted the covenant of Levi, saith the Lord of hosts." Unquote. Because of the priest's sinful behavior, God made them contemptible. The priests also exhibited partiality in their dealings with Jews. They acted no differently than some of their predecessors, as noted in the third chapter of Micah. Quote, "The heads thereof judge for reward, and the priests thereof teach for hire, and the prophets thereof divine for money." Unquote. God declared that he would exclude both priests and laymen who practice such wickedness. God condemned the Jews for their lax principles concerning domestic relationships. In Malachi's time, men seemed to treat divorce as a light matter. A similar attitude could be seen among the New Testament Pharisees. In the 19th chapter of Matthew's Gospel, for instance, they asked Jesus Christ, quote, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" Unquote. At that time, the Savior noted that while Moses allowed for divorce, in Deuteronomy chapter 24, it was due to the hard-heartedness of the Jewish men of his time. God declared that he hates divorce. Since divorce can result in disruptive family relationships, no man ought to deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. Malachi chapter 3 opened with a warning. God will send his messenger to the Jewish people. God compared that emissary to a refiner's fire that burns away dross, and to fuller's soap that cleanses away stains. That messenger will purify the priests. When this happened, the offerings made to God would become acceptable to him again. God will judge those who do not fear him. He will witness against those who practice magic, those who swear falsely, those who commit adultery, and those who oppress others. Yet, as he assured the Jews, quote, I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed, unquote. If they repented and returned unto him, he would forgive them, a message that appeared throughout the prophetic books. God accused the Jews of robbing him. They withheld their tithes and offerings from God. He invited them to, quote, bring ye in all the tithes into the storehouse, unquote. If they did so, he promised to open the windows of heaven and pour down abundant blessings upon them. Furthermore, he added, quote, I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, unquote. God noted how the Jews regretted the usefulness of serving God, while the wicked seemed to be securely established. Those Jews believed that, quote, it is vain to serve God, unquote. They asked themselves, quote, what profit is it that we have kept his ordinance, and that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts, unquote. With that negative mindset prevailing among themselves, these Jews reasoned, quote, and now we call the proud happy. Yea, they that work wickedness are set up. Yea, they that tempt God are even delivered, unquote. Asaph penned similar words in the 73rd Psalm, when he decried the prosperity of the wicked. Unlike Asaph, however, these Jews did not come to see matters from God's perspective, that the prosperity of the wicked was only a temporary phenomenon. God confronted the criticism of his dealings with the human race in the book of Malachi. He stated that he would create a book of remembrance for those who fear him. Such people will belong to him. He will spare them. Those who fear his name will prosper. Indeed, God said he will make the latter group his jewels. In the final chapter of Malachi, God reminded the Jews that the time of his judgment approached. Quote, behold, the day cometh that shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, and all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch, unquote. God exhorted the Jewish people to, quote, remember ye the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments, unquote. The Jewish people needed to repent of their transgressions and return to their God. The book of Malachi ended with both a promise and a threat. God said that before the day of the Lord arrived, he would send them one known as Elijah the prophet. That emissary would turn the hearts of fathers to their children, and the hearts of children to their fathers. As recorded in the 11th chapter of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus Christ declared that John the Baptist himself fulfilled that prediction. The book of Malachi closed with another warning. If the ministry of this emissary proved ineffectual, God might smite the earth with a curse. Contrast that statement with this proclamation, made in the final chapter of Revelation. Quote, blessed are they that do his commandments, unquote. As always, any individual's blessedness or condemnation depended upon his or her response to God's offer. The book of Malachi appears at the end of the English version of the Old Testament. It ends with a threat from God that he would curse the earth. However, consider the end of the New Testament in the book of Revelation, where there will be no more curse. God had something better for the Jewish people, and when he sent Jesus Christ to be their Messiah, he made those prophecies in Malachi come to pass. This session concludes our survey of the Old Testament. Thank you for listening faithfully to these programs.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.